Evening, everyone. I'm not really sure what the thread is running through what I'm about to say, but as we were just now, and then as we were praying before the service, the phrase was mentioned about being a community of praying people. And I wonder if that's a thread for us just to ask or to hold on to as we go through. What would it look like for us to be a community of praying people? What difference would that make to us? What difference would that make to our community? What difference would that make to our country and our world to be a community of praying people? What difference do communities of praying people make to our world? Let's hold on to that. And we're going to start with by doing our reading together. And it's longish, but that's okay. It's on Psalm 73, page 586. If we're thinking about prayer, it's maybe it's good to think about the prayers of the ancients and join in with them. So once you've found it, what we're going to do is read it, take turns, a verse at a time. So you guys will start off, and I'll join with these guys because they look like slightly fewer people over these sides. So you start nice and boldly, the odd-numbered verses. We will respond with the even-numbered verses. And we will get to verse 28. Go for it. But as for me, my feet had almost slipped. I had nearly lost my foothold. It is good to be near God. I have made the sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all your deeds. Amen. So I wonder if you found yourself a bit surprised to be expressing some of those sentiments in a prayer, in a song of worship. It's kind of a journey to go through together from the beginning of to the end of that psalm. But there are two verses in the middle that one theologian, a guy called Walter Brueggemann, thinks are the key to the whole of the book of Psalms. And in fact, in some ways, a bit of a key to the whole of the Bible. And they speak of the experience of prayer. They're right in the middle here, verses 16 and 70. When I tried to understand all this, it was oppressive to me. Another translation said, when I thought how to understand this, it seemed a wearisome task. Until, verse 17, I entered the sanctuary of God. And Walter Brueggemann, this theologian, sees in that a choice, in a way, which lies at the heart of what we do with all our stuff, what we do with all these things that churn around our heads. Where do we put them? Where do we go with them? The psalmist has been agonizing about the way the world works, and he's even become weary in that agonizing, in that turning over. He can't understand where he fits in. He can't understand where justice sits. He's tempted to descend into more and more bitterness. And then he makes a choice about what he's going to do with this, with his bitterness, with his confusion, with his fears. He enters the sanctuary of God. And in the presence of God, his perspective is changed. And there's this brilliant sense, I don't know if you felt it as you were kind of reading out the verses, there's this kind of sense of relief as we come to those verses. I read a bit of a change in the psalm, and it feels like a relief to say, we understand that the whole future is in the hands of God. My flesh and my heart may fail, and our flesh does fail. And our hearts do lead us to all sorts of crazy places. They send us way off. But God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. So the psalmist is able to say by the end of this psalm, by the end of this journey, it's good to be near God. Somebody once said about the Psalms, but I think it's true of God in general, a God that we know in Jesus, that God behaves in the Psalms, and I think God behaves in prayer, in ways in which he shouldn't be allowed to behave in systematic theology. What I mean by that is a God who created the universe shouldn't allow human beings to yell at him to wake up, as we do in Psalm 44. A God who created the world shouldn't concede the dignity of being compared to a chicken. He's compared to a chicken in Psalm 91. He shouldn't allow that if this is a God that we dreamed up from first principles. He shouldn't allow human beings with all our faultiness, with all our sinfulness, to influence him. Wouldn't it make more sense for God to just be fixed like a statue, like an idol? Wouldn't it make more sense if God was unmoved by us? It makes no sense that God would allow us to come and yell at him as the psalmist does here about how everyone else is doing better than us, and the wicked, they're wicked, and I'm good, and how come I'm having such a terrible time? It makes no sense that he would allow us to implore him and that he would listen to us. But this is the God who showed us most fully who he is, what he's like in Jesus. And we humans yelled at Jesus. We yelled at him to wake up when he was in a boat and there was a stormy sea. We mocked him, we whipped him, we spat at him, we murdered him. This is a God who showed us in Jesus that he's moved by our suffering to the extent that he weeps with us, he weeps for us. This is God who was born as a baby, who before he could even crawl, a baby can't even decide where he goes without another human being moving him. And this is the astonishing gift of prayer, that we may come into the presence of God anytime, with all our mixed up motives, with all our uncomfortable thoughts, our downright offensive thoughts sometimes, our confusion, our questions, and that he will meet us and enable us. And because this doesn't always happen immediately, that he will enable us to discover and eventually to say, my flesh and my heart may fail, my dreams and my plans, my days may go wrong, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. This is the gift of prayer, and it's an astonishing gift. And I wonder if, first of all, a community of praying people are people who know this and who live this. People who know that when our hearts and our heads are churning with all this stuff, we know that we've got a God who meets us in it. And maybe if we know nothing else, we know that. Maybe if we know nothing else about prayer, we know that it's heard. So we know that God meets us. We know that God hears us. We know that he allows us to yell at him. But sometimes I'll just check Facebook one more time, or I'll watch another video on YouTube, or I'll find something else to do. What idiocy that the God of heaven is there and I will choose not to be aware of him. So there are two lives pictured in this psalm. There's the first half of the psalm, what we can do with our confusion and our anger and our bitterness at an unjust world, or what we can do with our own stuff. The psalmist sees those who are arrogant and wicked triumphing, and he admits how he feels about it. He feels envious, he feels tempted, he feels angry. And for these first verses, that's what he focuses on. He looks around, he dwells on this injustice, and we can do that. We can feed our own sense of anger. We can feed our own sense of how the stuff that's going on in our heads. And it's a monochrome life. It's a black and white kind of a life. They're wicked, I'm good. They're prosperous, I'm suffering, and it's not fair. It's a shut down life, a monochrome life. It's focused on them and focused on me. But then there's this second life pictured, which is a different choice for what we can do with our stuff, with what we can do with the stuff of the world. Entering the sanctuary of God, till I entered the sanctuary of God. A life of prayer. And we see a transformation in this. The eyes of the psalmist clear, and they see that what had consumed their mind was like a dream. It becomes a dream. And what they're left with is the reality of God, which is so much more solid than anything they'd experienced before. They see themselves honestly, and we see ourselves honestly in prayer. I was senseless and ignorant. But in seeing themselves in this way, and seeing themselves honestly and with clear eyes, they know that there's hope for a new way. They know that there's hope for transformation and change and something different. They know that there's room to be guided by God. You will guide me with your counsel. You hold me by my right hand. They know that there's a possibility that God will hold them and pull them in another direction, or will just say, I'm here with you. And to me, this seems like it's a technicolor life compared to the monochrome life of them and us. It's a technicolor life when a whole new perspective opens up. And this is what is offered to us in a life of prayer. I think I'm just going to skip over that. I don't know what you think of when you hear the phrase a life of prayer. I think there are some quite unhelpful images around that. We've got some pictures. To be in the presence of God, you must either be by yourself and preferably uncomfortable and in a robe of some kind, or you must be with a lot of other people and singing songs, or it will be tough. It will be kind of like a life of bread and water only. I don't really know what a life of prayer looks like, but I'm almost certain it involves candles and a lot of sobbing, a lot of feelings going on. And there actually isn't anything wrong with any of this stuff. Some of it is actively helpful. It is actively helpful sometimes to be on our own in prayer. It's helpful to kneel sometimes. We're physical creatures, and what we do with our bodies makes a difference. Being with other people, turning our eyes to God in worship, is actively helpful in our prayer lives. Candles? Some people like a candle. Nothing wrong with that. But I think we can get a bit hung up on a life of prayer and think that's something kind of alien and crazy. But we worship a God who was born among us. What do we think about God? What do we really believe God was like? When we see Jesus and how he engaged with people over meals and on the water and in a barbecue on the beach and in weeping with them and in eating with them and in wrestling with them, I think a life of prayer could look a little bit more like this. I struggled to come up with pictures, really. But here are a few. A bit of arm wrestling. Or vast crowds. This is a picture of the march yesterday. But actually, I was remembering, too, that before the Berlin Wall came down, several months before the Berlin Wall came down, a group of people started praying about it. And that group of people praying about it grew and grew and grew. So a life of prayer can look like arm wrestling. It can look like a crowd which changes the world. It can look like dinner over the table with friends. It can look like haggling in a market. And it can look like laughing with a friend. And so much more, because we're all individuals. And how we all engage with God who is alive will vary for each one of us. A life in prayer is a life in technicolor. And the prayer is the presence of God, the sanctuary of God, wherever we are and in whatever circumstance. One word or a million words, on the bus or on your bike or on your feet. This is the promise of God in Jesus and by the gift of his Spirit. So a life of prayer, I think, looks colourful and exhilarating and unexpected, because it's with the God of the whole universe. The God of the whole universe dreamed up out of his imagination a variety of creatures. I was just thinking of wildebeest. They're crazy, aren't they? And those fish and the coral, which is extraordinary colours. This is the God in whom we can meet in prayer. This is the God who we can chat with on the bus or on our knees in a robe. This relationship with God is alive. And it's fun. Children laugh 300 times a day, and adults laugh 5 times a day, I'm told. And yet we're called to become like little children. And I don't think our prayer life excludes this. I've been reading and obsessing about, I've probably recommended it to most people here, a book called Dirty Glory by Pete Gregg, which you must read. It's brilliant. And he tells a story in this, there we are. He tells a story in this about, he's an incredible prayer warrior, about how he was walking along one day and He said, God doesn't speak to me with an audible voice very much, but very occasionally he has. And he was walking along one day, and God said to him, look at that tree. And it just doesn't happen to him very much. So he was like, oh. So he looked at the tree. And he said, a he was waiting. He said, I was waiting for like the tree to burst into flames like a burning bush and God to like reveal something new about himself to me. Or maybe the tree would fall over and I would heroically dive and catch it and save a child from being crushed by the tree. So he stood there like waiting. What's God going to say to me about this tree? It's so exciting. And he was listening there for a while and waiting for this big revelation. And then he heard God say to him, I just thought it was a really nice tree. And Pete Gregg was kind of walked away a little bit kind of sheepish about it. And he said, he talks about the fact that our relationship with God one day will be removed from all the stuff that we might bring to him. We'll be removed from the suffering of the world. We'll be removed from the injustice of the world. And sometimes, you know, when we're in that place with God, when we're in a heavenly place with him, and there's no more weeping and crying, our relationship with him will continue. What will we talk to him about then? Be a whole lifetime of going, a whole eternity of going, nice tree, Lord. Nice sky. Brilliant stars. Jesus hung out at parties and over meals and with children, as well as having really deep, intense conversations. And prayer, a life of prayer, if it sounds very solemn and very dignified, it won't always settle us down. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was one of the last century's great prayers. He was a pastor in Germany in the 1930s. I'm sure you'll have heard of him. And he prayed every day using the Psalms as his bedrock of prayer, going through them. He went through them every month. And he didn't get up from his knees saying, well, now I understand it's all going to be okay. There's this guy called Hitler coming to power, but I can just ignore all that just pray some more. He prayed, and as his eyes cleared in the presence of God, he saw with clarity the role he was to play in challenging this dictator. He became an active part of the resistance. He ended up dying because of his opposition to Nazism. And he never stopped praying these daily psalms to bring him consciously into the presence of God. A life of prayer can be an unexpected life. And as well as settling us, as well as rooting us, it can also stir us. It can also bring us to life in new and unexpected ways. So if we're to be a community of praying people, I think that's partly about being a community of transformed people. And being a community of transformed people transforms others. Being transformed helps us be transformational. And prayer changes situations. And I've asked Rachel, who is one of life's inspiring prayers, to come and tell us about her prayer with Christians Against Poverty. There's a group of people who pray about Christians Against Poverty regularly, and I'm always really inspired to hear how prayers are prayed and answered. And I asked Rachel to come and share something. Here is a list, if that's helpful.
Thank you. So Christians Against Poverty, many of you may not know about it, but it's a charity based in Bradford that we All Saints Church partners with, and myself and Winnie were trained to do the work of Christians Against Poverty in the community, and people who are really, really struggling in different ways, one of them with debt, call up CAP and ask for help, and we have the opportunity of going into their homes and helping them start the journey of getting out of debt. And while they're on that journey, we have monthly prayer meetings for different things in their lives. Because when we get into their lives, when we meet them, they open up, and there's so much in their lives that we get to get involved in. And so the monthly prayer meetings are really, really helpful for us to meet and pray. Because on their own, they cannot pray, because they are just surrounded by all these struggles they are going through. And so I feel like God uses us to stand in the gap for them at that moment, and then until they are able to stand as well and continue on their journey. So one story I want to share is of a lady that I'll call Anna, who I met, I think, 3 years ago. She was, she had been told that she would be losing her sight, and she was living on a fourth floor flat, and yet she really had bad problems with her knees and legs, and she had just broken up with her divorced she had gotten home and found her husband had left his wedding ring on the table with all these debts that he had accumulated that she didn't know about. And so it was just her and her two daughters. And she was really scared. She was always scared of picking up the phone, scared of opening letters. And to cut the long story short, when I first met her, we had the first meeting, and we prayed for healing, that she would not lose her sight, that that she will be able to find a house, that the council will be able to provide a house for her. And I shared all these prayer requests with the prayer group, and we prayed for Anna for quite a while. 2 years down the road, she never lost her sight. She was God provided a house for her on a ground floor flat, where she's able to. It's like a sheltered accommodation because she's quite elderly, so she's being cared for where she's living. And she also went debt free, because through CAP, if you have loads of debts and you're just on benefits, and it's going to take you more than 20 years, we take you through a process where the debts get wiped. So her debts were also cleared. And she got a Bible and started her own journey of knowing this God and starting to stand, just getting nearer to God, like was reading about in the Psalms, nearer to God herself, because she's got that strength and because she had us to support her and to pray for her on the journey that she was on. So that's just one story, but I have loads of other stories.
No, my turn. I find the CAP prayer list really inspiring, because we pray really specifically and we see really specific answers to prayer. So I'd really encourage you to you can join a CAP prayer email list by talking to Rachel, and there are monthly meetings where you can get involved with a bit of that, because that's the other thing. Prayer changes situations. Prayer changes stuff. And this is a two-year journey, and it's sometimes immediate, and sometimes it's we persist, but prayer changes things. I gave the example of the East German situation, and the wall came down, and I think prayer was involved in that. This growing group of people praying about a wall coming down. It's extraordinary, in a peaceful way, which could perhaps not have been anticipated, for such radical change to happen so peacefully. And there's another story in the booklets that you'd have all been given about how in the Second World War, a day of prayer was called in this nation by the Prime Minister, who everything was going pear-shaped. George VI called for a national day of prayer when the British Army were being faced with disaster. Within days, bad weather grounded the Luftwaffe squadrons that had been bombing London, while a surprising calm covered the English Channel, allowing an armada of ships, large and small, military and private, to cross to Dunkirk and rescue over 300,000 troops. It's such a mystery how all this stuff works, but prayer is heard, and that's another way in which a community of praying people and communities of praying people throughout the world change things, change situations. So this is supposed to be a quick start series when we think about the real ABCs, the basics of the Christian faith. Who is Jesus? What's the Bible all about? Prayer, worship. So these are some real basics on prayer, which I'm sure you're all over anyway, so I'm going to rush through them. I know I've got L plates on front and back when it comes to prayer, so I'm always up for learning more. I asked another person who I really admire for their prayer lives about this. I said, give me some stuff. What drives you in prayer? She said three things. She said, it comes from who do you think God is? Who do you think God is? And she's just at the ground of her being, she's convinced that God is a loving father who gives good gifts to his children. God is a loving father who gives good gifts to his children. And that is the ground of her prayer. That's why she talks to God on the bus and in long days of prayer, but also as she goes around. She also said, you don't have to dress up for prayer. You don't have to get yourself ready into feeling prayerful. You can just do it anyway. And she's found praying with the Bible really helpful, reminding herself of the promises of God. So those are a few quick starts. And here's one more, if we could have the next slide. Oh, I didn't mean that one. One after that. There we go. So this is kind of a model of private prayer that some people find helpful. And again, you may well know it already, and it's not rules, but it's a helpful thing. The word ACTS: adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication. So if you're kind of, you want to pray, and or you're looking for a new routine of prayer, here's a way of starting. Here's one way of starting. Adoration lifts our eyes from the everyday to heaven. When I was preparing this, I looked out the window. There's an amazing sunset. And so I thought, I'll just go for a walk in this sunset. And just, it's great to pray in that kind of adoring way. And when we're adoring God, when we're delighting in him, amazingly, we also realize his delight in us. And that, again, is the ground and root of our prayer. When we know God's delight in us, that's his first word to all of us, his love and delight for all of us. That's the ground of our prayer, starting with adoration. Confession opens our eyes to the possibility of change, of newness, of adventure, of freedom from what traps us. As we know God's delight in us, we can be honest about the less than delightful parts of ourselves and know that we can know freedom from them. Know that God doesn't love us any less, but he can free us from the stuff that holds us back. Thankfulness, thanksgiving, means we take time and notice and praise God for the variety of ways in which he's in our world. And it helps us notice when God has answered our prayers. And again, this is a really good thing about the CAT prayer list, is that not only do we pray specifically for issues, we also see when specific answers are made. So we have an opportunity to give thanks. And then S, supplication, it spells out ACT. Supplication, which I guess kind of means requests or intercession or asking. And this opens our eyes to the world around us. It opens our eyes to the world, the joys and sorrows of the world, how God sees them, and how we're somehow with him and through our prayers involved in bringing about a new resurrected life to the world. And the more specific we are as we supplicate him, is that the right? Yeah. As we come to him in supplication, the more we'll see when he answers us. So as a quick start, This is a one good way of coming into the presence of God. And let me give a specific about this. And one of the reasons I find this kind of structure helpful sometimes when I don't know how else to pray, I've got to be honest, I find it quite difficult to know how to pray about the inauguration this week. I feel really wrangling about it. I can get really angry and bitter, and then I don't know where to start praying. Something like this, structure like this, helps me, first of all, remember who God is. Remember God's love and delight. Confess my own nonsense before I turn to the nonsense of anybody else. Confess my own sinfulness. Confess my own sinful ways. Thank God for how he has been at work in the world since time immemorial. And when I come then to supplication and to asking God about how he intervenes in the world, about this confusing situation that we find ourselves in as a world, I feel like I come to it with a purer heart and with a better way of asking God about engaging the world with the world as it really is, rather than the world as I would like it to be. So, a community of praying people. I wonder if anything's come to you as we've been thinking about this. A community of praying people. I think it makes a difference to us personally. I think it makes a difference in our relationships. I think it makes a difference in where we go, because it helps us order ourselves after God's good order. And I think it changes the world. I think it changes the world because it has done in the past, and I think it will continue to do so. And I think it changes the world in twos and threes and gatherings of small gatherings, as well as in the massive gatherings of people. The final thing about kind of a quick start ABC of prayer is that prayer is attacked. I do believe there's an enemy who doesn't want us to hang out with God, who doesn't want the love and delight and transformation that comes with that. So there will always be distractions, there'll always be reasons, there'll always be guilt to make us feel bad about not praying or not praying well enough or whatever. So the best way of engaging in a life of prayer is just to do it, just to pray however we feel. Put down the phone, say a prayer, say a word of prayer on the bus, and I think God, that when we give God a tiny bit, he will flood in. When we give him a tiny bit of attention, my experience is that he floods in and fills our eyes again. You've all got a little booklet, which is kind of a really introductory guide to prayer, and I think it's got a really helpful resource, and you might find it helpful for yourself, but you also might find that there are people around you who may or may not have much of a developed relationship with God who might find this helpful too. I think a life of prayer, as we've seen in this psalm, can really transform us. And I think sometimes inviting people to talk about prayer is one way of opening up a conversation with them about who God is. So after you've had a look through it yourself, keep it by all means if you want it, but maybe you want to think about, you know, maybe there are friends or co-workers or neighbours who might find a life of prayer something that they would want to enter into, and this is a really good introductory resource to how we pray. So I think we should pray. Let's get to work. We're a community of people who God can use to transform his world. Let's do it.